Time again on Coast Access Radio for another age-friendly cities and communities program with Jill Stansfield from the Kapiti Older Persons Council. Welcome, Jill. Welcome to summer.
Isn't it lovely to have it that little bit warmer?
It's been warm. I mean, November was a pretty warm month, to be fair.
Well, I think the winter was warmer than average as well.
Yeah.
You know, do we call it climate change or climate difference or what?
You know, now this is an interesting point because they talk about older people wanting warmer climes and climates.
Mm-hmm.
So is this an advantage? You know, people move to warmer places to retire.
Yeah.
Now we're getting warmer. There's got to be some advantages to climate change. We all look at it as negative. It's raising ocean levels and raising temperatures and all that sort of stuff. And everyone sees it as a negative. But is there some positivity to it?
Well, there probably is, but I think we have to accept that way the world works, there was an average and a norm, if you like. Mm. And once nature is pushed outside those boundaries, things start going a bit wrong, don't they?
Well, what I'm getting at, I suppose, is, I mean, over hundreds of thousands of years, there has been changes in the climate, the ice age, ages, and so on. And human beings and other animals seem to have adapted. Now, I know this is exacerbated by man-made elements in the atmosphere and so on.
Mm.
But for older people, and this is the program we're looking at, you know, is it more age-friendly for the climate to be warmer?
Well, I think there's a range that people respond best to. And I think either too cold or too hot, unpleasant for older persons than for younger persons. Because you do hear some older people sometimes almost complaining about the heat and saying, oh, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that because I get so hot and I can't.
At times it creates more wind as well, and wind from odd directions. And we've had a lot of that in the last couple of months. And that causes allergies, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, in my case, when the wind is blowing from, well, inland towards the sea, I can bet my bottom dollar that there's going to be a fair bit of pollen in that. Mm. My car will agree with me. My barbecue cover will agree with me.
Yeah.
And when all is said and done, we're not, that happy with those variations just because of what they do to us.
Yeah, and it's the adjustment, I suppose, over hundreds and thousands of years, evolution. We're not quite having evolution because it's just happening within 10 years, 20 years.
Yeah, sort of that's something I hadn't thought of too.
But so the pollen's been around. I've got a black car, so I've noticed it. It's been around probably since about July and August.
Yes, you're not wrong there.
So,
yeah, and it does or will make me sneeze and it makes my eyes itch.
Yeah.
But I do have an antihistamine that will work and does work. But it's interesting because if we talk about antihistamines for a moment, the more modern ones that don't cross the blood-brain barrier are far less effective for me to take than the old-fashioned ones which cross the blood-brain barrier. What's the significance of that? If they cross the blood-brain barrier, they are likely to make you feel a bit sleepy.
Good point.
So there you go, catch 22 again.
So the best general advice seems to be to seek well-informed advice.
I think so too.
That's a great sentence. I like that.
Anyway, but if we go back and think about other things that we often do talk about, if we think for a moment about the number of disabled people in New Zealand, apparently one in four people have a disability of one sort or another. And even today, that is around 1.1 million.
Now, we're not talking necessarily physical disabilities. Yes, that's more obvious, but there are other disabilities that you don't necessarily see in a person.
Yeah, see, well, sense, if you like, sensory disabilities.
Yeah.
But anyway, thinking about this, it is interesting to note that the Human Rights Commission claims that New Zealand is a fully inclusive society, and then adds, full inclusion requires a barrier-free physical and social environment.
Do you agree with that?
Yes. It's absolutely essential to have a physically barrier-free environment, but whether or not you have it is another matter, because often I find that I can't get from my car to where I want to go without having to deal with a step up from the gutter. Now, that might seem very insignificant to other people, but if you're relying upon a blooming walking frame or a couple of walking poles, that's a confounded nuisance.
Well, it sort of assimilates to, for example, in your own home, getting in and out of a shower. Now, some people have their showers over a bath, and that can be impossible. And some have a little bit of a lip to get over. But it seems as though newer bathrooms and newer showers don't have that at all. They just have a slight incline when you're in the shower, and you can just walk straight in and out without having to step over everything, as an example.
Yeah, absolutely. But that then relies upon a very effective waterproof strip on the bottom of the door, so it keeps the water in the shower.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, an effective drainage system, all that.
Yeah, well, you can tell that I've got a shower like that, and my son-in-law very kindly fitted a strip that performs well and keeps the water in the shower and not let it creep out under the door when I'm in there, which is really very helpful.
Yeah.
But anyway, one conclusion in that report that I was talking about adds, disabled New Zealanders do not have the same access to public places and facilities as their counterparts do. A significant part of the problem is that the built environment is not designed with the needs of all citizens in mind.
Yeah, I think we were talking about that in the last program.
Yeah, we
For example,
were.
new home builds, you know,
yep.
looking at designs where, you know, people are going to stay in that home for life, which means that over time, you know, people may have more physical disabilities, if you like, and need wider doorways, need wider hallways.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Why not build a home that has that to start with?
I couldn't agree more, but that then requires a bit of a shift in public thinking again. So anyway, this means that, sort of going back to what I was talking about, disabled New Zealanders frequently face barriers in places where non-disabled New Zealanders take access for granted.
Mm.
And these barriers will negatively affect more people as the population ages. And I'm quoting that from, if people are interested, page 26, and Better Design and Buildings for Everyone, Disabled People's Rights and the Built Environment.
Mm.
Yeah. But to quote the chief executive of Community Housing Aotearoa, fully accessible housing should be a given, not a nice to have. Most of us have little understanding of the difficulties in living in what might be called an ordinary home if you are disabled in any way.
Yeah.
And that's what you've been talking about too. And again, a reminder, 1 in 4, 1.1 million New Zealanders are disabled, with 35% of those being over 65.
Mm.
So with age comes increasing disability.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Understandable.
Well, yeah. Sorry.
So I was going to say it's understandable that statistic could only grow, because we're going to get more of a population base that's going to be 65 plus in
Absolutely.
Time.
And it's not really even a bulge. It's going to continue that way for quite some considerable time. But at any rate, worldwide, 15% of the whole world's population is actually disabled. And a point of interest, apparently Spain is the best country to live in if you are disabled.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Something I would never have thought about. I've been to Spain and I've been into the centre of Spain, where there are still some walled medieval villages, towns. They're not really big enough to be called cities. But, you know, I kind of don't remember it being that easy to get around. Mind you, I did have a backpack on my back most of the time.
Yeah. Is there a bit of a breakdown in New Zealand, for example? Yes, you say statistically, you know, 35% of those over 65 are disabled. Would there be more of a percentage of other groups, such as Māori, Pacifica, and so on? Has that been done?
Yes, it has. And yes, you are right. Both Māori and Pacifica are inclined to have higher percentages than, well, the other groups might be a tactful way of putting it, because it does include more than just the English people, if you like to put it that
European,
way.
European, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, New Zealand's last disability survey was done in 2013, and it won't be reviewed until next year. So New Zealand is still using that disability info 9 years on from the date it was collected.
It's getting a little out of date. I understand that, but hard to do these surveys. It'll be interesting to see what crops up next year.
It will be. But given that we have an ageing population, this is really a bit discouraging. And of interest, apparently the most common disability for adults are classed as physical and sensory disabilities. The United Nations Secretariat for the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities states that persons with disabilities include those who have long-term physical, mental, intellectual or sensory impairments, which in interaction with various barriers may hinder their full and effective participation in society on an equal basis with others. And that's the, what will we say, the $64 million key.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, you know, not every older person is going to be disabled, but as we've said before, statistically there's a higher percentage of older people who are classified as disabled as opposed to those, say, under 65.
Absolutely. Well, it tends to happen with age. I mean, if you've been involved with sport throughout your life and have sustained a few injuries, as most people who play sport will, then, you know, sometimes they, how will I put it politely, worsen with the passing of time. And so that does affect people's ability to get out and about.
Yeah, and it's interesting. There is, from that survey of 2013 on the Statistics New Zealand site, I guess you can look this up yourself and look at the statistics of people. And yeah, quite rightly, I see one of the points is, it's interesting, Māori and Pacific people had higher than average disability rates after adjusting for differences in ethnic population age profiles. And as we know, statistically again, Māori, Pacifica, don't live as long.
No, I know. And so it's a double whammy, isn't it? But if you go on with that disability survey result, the comment there, for adults, physical limitations are the most common type of impairment. For children, learning difficulty was the most common impairment. 6% of children, 52% of disabled children had difficulty with learning. Now, another sobering point is that just over half of all disabled people, in other words, 53%, had more than one type of impairment.
Oh, so you, now you don't necessarily assimilate that, do you?
No, you just don't. I couldn't agree more. Oh. But the most common cause of disability for adults was disease or illness, and that was 42%. For children, the most common cause was a condition that existed at birth, and that affected 49%.
But
so that's
half.
A bit sobering.
Gosh.
Again.
And different parts of the country are affected differently too,
yes,
Jill.
Yes, they are. The Auckland regional disability rate at 19% was lower than the national average. Bay of Plenty and Manawatu Whanganui were both 27%. Northland 29% and Taranaki 30%. And they all experienced above average disability rates.
Now, you'd expect, for example, the Kapiti Hauruwhenua region to be right up there, given the percentage of population. What's the second oldest population in the country in this area, maybe now the first?
Well, it's on a par with Thames Coromandel, that I do know. But yeah, but it's really interesting to find out that there is a growing awareness and understanding of the need to be aware of the differences that are, well, have to be put up with those with a disability. It doesn't matter what sort of disability. But we now have a New Zealand Ministry of Disabled People, and that was launched on the 1st of the 7th month of 2022.
In July.
Yeah, and that was in July, yep. And the Minister for Disability Issues is Poto Williams.
Mm-hmm.
The claim is that the Ministry will, and I quote, offer a single point of contact within the government for disabled people administering disability support, including rolling out the Enabling Good Lives approach. And evidently, the Enabling Good Lives approach was first developed in Christchurch when, in 2011, a group of people from the disability sector concluded that a fundamental shift was needed to give disabled people greater choice and control over their supports and their lives. And the report was actually entitled Enabling Good Lives.
So does that dovetail with Age Friendly and the philosophies there?
Well, that's a very good point, and I haven't actually got a full copy of that Enabling Good Lives report. Sometimes I find it a bit hard to locate things online, and I got the reference that I needed and left it there, so apologies for that. But the Enabling Good Lives is a partnership between the disability sector and the government agencies, and they are looking at a new way of doing things led by disabled people, families and whānau, and you can find Enabling Good Lives stories online, and that is enablinggoodlives.co.nz. It will take you there, but that's more for the stories rather than the rest of it.
Yeah.
But what I've talked about should help reassure us all that first and foremost topics are included all, to a greater or lesser degree, also age-friendly, especially as the rate of disability increases with age. And as I've said before, focusing on these topics does bring to mind that there is an ever-increasing need to focus on the do-it-once-do-it-right concept.
Indeed.
And I say it with a bit of a giggle because, you know, it often is done the way it's always been done rather than looking at doing it once and doing it right. And I think it's a bit unfortunate that that is the case, because we'll all save both time and money, and that really, in the final analysis, is going to appeal to almost everyone, I think.
Well, what will be interesting is the next survey, as we say, this disability survey with the statistics. It's 2013, so it's well overdue. I guess, you know, maybe they'll look in time at doing surveys maybe 5 years as opposed to 10 years or so. I wonder whether they can sort of be done with the census in there as well.
Well, that's an interesting thought. But the actual 2013 survey was apparently the fourth one that had been done. The New Zealand Disability Survey is currently the most comprehensive source of information on disabled people in New Zealand, even though it's dated 2013.
Mm.
It allows for comparisons between disabled and non-disabled people on key social and economic outcomes.
Do you know? Do you have any idea how they did the survey? Was it just one of those random phone surveys?
No, I don't. It focuses on the prevalence of disability across population subgroups and on disability rates for specific impairment types. Information is also available from the survey on barriers that disabled people encounter in their everyday lives, including their use of and need for support services and assistive devices.
Mm.
And compare with earlier disability surveys, the 2013 disability survey includes a greater range of information about social outcomes. In addition to the economic outcomes of labour force status, income and educational attainment, we now have information about feelings of safety and experience of crime, social contact and access to leisure activities.
Were the previous surveys prior to 2013 also 10 yearly, or were they a different time frame?
I think they were done more regularly, because it is constantly noted that this is done, it's been a long time since the last one was done.
Right, okay.
So that suggests to me it has been done at a more regular interval.
Yeah, it's interesting. this type of survey. And it's almost, again, you know, I'm thinking about the census. And it is census year next year, 2023, so that'll be the time to do it, I suppose.
Well,
and
hopefully.
Statistical analysis.
Yeah.
Really?
But as in the three previous surveys, because this one that we have here is the fourth, disability is defined as long-term limitation resulting from impairment in a person's ability to carry out their everyday activities.
Yeah.
The limitations identified were self-reported or reported on behalf of the disabled person by their parent or primary caregiver. So in other words, in a lot of cases, it won't be the person themselves that are giving the info.
Mm.
But it was the data was collected from adults aged 15 and over and children under 15 years living in private households or group homes and from adults living in residential care facilities. All of these groups are included in the data except where stated.
Mm. So it's quite comprehensive, really, and it gives an overview to, I guess, the government to say, right, this is where we need to provide support, whether it be monetary, whether it be some other type of support, more workers here. And as we say, it'll be fascinating how that's changed in a 10-year period.
It will. But if we go back to have a quick think about the 2013 disability survey, an estimated 24% of people living in New Zealand were identified as disabled. And yes, I'm recapping on this.
Mm.
And a total of 1,062,000 people were limited in their ability to carry out everyday activities by at least one impairment type. That's sobering.
It is.
You know.
Very sobering.
Both the number of disabled people and the disability rate are higher than in earlier surveys. The proportion of the New Zealand population in the older age groups is growing, and people in these age groups are more likely to be disabled than younger adults or children. However, population ageing does not account for all the increases. People, and this is interesting, people may be more willing to report their limitations as public perception of disability changes. In other words, when I was a kid, if I think about it, persons who were disabled, you were beyond, you know, they were quite often beyond the pale. You know, you didn't really want to have anything to do with them, and they were regarded as different, odd, unusual.
You never had, you know, and I hate to say this, you never had much to do with the kid at school who was in a wheelchair. Or the kid who'd had, say, polio, for example.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were just sort of sitting on the sidelines while you were playing Bull Rush.
Mm.
You know, those sorts of things.
Well, they were left out of pretty well everything in a way because they were different. I mean, different wasn't acceptable in those days.
You're right, sadly. It is now.
Yeah, I wish I wasn't.
Now we're very, very integrated.
Yeah. Well, people may be more willing to report their limitations as public perception of disability changes, which is kind of what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
A methodological in the survey could also be a contributing factor. In other words, changing how you ask questions and what you ask questions about can change the outcome.
And that's what we need to do to become more age-friendly, Jill.
I know. And when all is said and done, we're back to this old bugbear, and I know I talk about it all the time, public education and the level of public understanding.
Yeah.
And it is the toughie.
And keep doing it, and we will keep doing it into 2023 and beyond.
We will.
Because we're not far away from that, Jill.
No, we're not.
All right. Well, that's cooled us off on a nice hot summer's day, hopefully. All right. And that's about it, because we're just about out of time, unless there's anything else to add, Jill.
I think it's important to recognise that physical limitation is the most common type of impairment. And, you know, that's the one that means it's hard for people to get out and about and around.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there is the risk of social isolation and loneliness, which increases the risk of some of these nasty diseases. Bit of a catch-22 in a way, isn't it?
Yep. Keep pushing, Jill.
I will.
Keep doing it.
But thank you for that input.
Jill, always lovely to catch up, and we look forward to talking again. We will do so before Christmas.
We will.
We can get there. Christmas. Sorry about that. Ooh, I think we've got a couple more chats before, just before Christmas Day, anyway. So, Jill, lovely to speak with you, and we look forward to our continued association. Thank you, Jill.
Oh, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Our Age-Friendly Cities and Communities program, every fortnight we do it in association with the Kapiti Older Persons Council here at Coast Access Radio.
This program is made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.